Hello, and welcome to episode 151 of the Awesome Comics Podcast, the place where small press comics make one hell of a big noise. Yes, it came back. I thought, why not? Why not? After a triumphant episode 150. I thought I'd bring the classic catchphrase back. Yes, I am Vince Hunt, creator of the ghost story Murder Road. And I'm joined by the creator behind the martial arts
Vanguard.
Well, not Vanguard or the vigilante cop Action Tail Viper. Dan's on his way. I think he's saving some puppies somewhere. He's dispensing.
See, I reckon he's on the train because he keeps messaging us stuff and he's clearly bored on the train.
You think he's in one of those talking toilets, don't you?
I love those. We were talking about this earlier. If you go for a poo on, I think it's the Virgin trains, he goes, "Hello, I'm a toilet." Oh, fucking hell. I'm gonna do a big brown poo baby in your face then.
Oh, Tony, really? Yes, for those who don't know, that I'm also joined by the man behind the martial arts crime caper, Cockney Kung Fu. It's Mr. Tony Esmond.
Hello.
Yes, he's recording from his shed.
I'm in a fucking hotel room again. I'm like, I think I'm like Alan Partridge.
You just constantly in a hotel. You've got your big plate, haven't you? So you're all right.
Yeah, I think I'm going to do something with the trouser press in a minute.
What? Don't do it. Don't do it while we're recording, man. You know, we don't need that. Yeah.
All right, Snoop Dogg.
Look, I'm just trying to get our target demographic a bit. just change that.
We're trying to be cool. Appeal to the kids. Dog. All right, dog. Fuck, we're in trouble.
Yeah.
I'll tell you.
Yeah. Oh dear, bunch of grumpy old men, and I'm going to get grumpy in a minute. But do you know what doesn't make me grumpy, Tony?
My balls.
Yes, and you can get if you want Tony's balls, you can get a subscription for
it. Yeah, like the Netflix for balls.
Oh dear. Anyway,
yeah.
Comic House. Yes.
Knew you were going to say that.
Thank you for sponsoring us once again, chaps. They help keep the lights on Awesome Pod HQ whenever we record, and they're always a huge supporters of the show. So, like, there's lots of conventions and going on at the moment, but if you can't make it to one in your area, then Comic House has you covered. They've got tons of brilliant independent comics available online.
It's like a convention on your iPod.
Cool, you're on form today, aren't you? Do you want to do the ad?
No, you do.
Go on.
The reason I like Comic House so much is because we're in a little Facebook Messenger group with Pete Jean Paul, not his real name. And all we do is send each other stupid messages. Makes no sense whatsoever. And that's why I like it so much.
It just started off with a thumbs up, and now the whole... Yeah, it's just GIFs of people just giving each other a thumbs up. That's how grown up we are.
It's been going on for weeks.
I know. It's just getting more and more elaborate. I love it. Yeah. I tell you what else is growing. The amount of comics that you can get on Comic House.
Oh, nicely done.
Yeah, thanks. There's tons of stuff that you can get on the website and beyond.
It's like a library on your iPad.
We're recording midweek, which we don't normally do. We're all a little bit mental.
It's gone. What's happened?
I know.
I'm in the Premier Inn.
Well, what are you gonna order? Are you gonna order some garlic bread? Lenny Henry likes ordering garlic bread.
Might order a pizza. Have it delivered to my room during the show. That'd be exciting, wouldn't it?
You are rock and roll. You should do that.
I know.
Yeah, do that.
Yeah.
Don't order anything that'll look funny on the receipt though.
I know.
No, we don't do that. Not on this show.
Big screen in here. I'd find watching pornography on it a bit intimidating, to be fair. Oh. The screen's too big.
You just go watch like a Dolph Lundgren film instead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That'll be right.
Yeah, I'm sure it will. but Comic House has tons of comics available. Yeah. And the Comic House app is the go-to place if you like reading them digitally as well. For only £3 a month, you get access to all of the digital titles available on Comic House. Like The Pool List, the latest issue of The Pool Wish, which has got a cover by Andy Clift and Captain Cosmic, which is also on Comic House, isn't it? And that is a unbelievable comic.
I like Andy Clift. He's a good bloke.
He's a very, very nice chap. Yeah, the featured creator on Comic House at the moment is our pal John Late.
Oh, is it Latey, is it? Yeah. Oh, he's doing a sort of sexy interview to camera, is he?
No, he's just the featured creator. Right. Oh, I mean, okay. He always does a sexy interview to camera. But
that is true.
Yeah. Okay. But if you want to find out more about the Comic House app, go to comichouse.com and sign up today for your 14-day free trial. So there you go. I think that was the most chaotic and unprepared.
You think so?
Bad. I think we're.
I thought it went all right.
Yeah. Well, you got a little bit more involved than you normally do.
I know. I was feeling the loss of Dan. He hasn't died.
No.
But I'm just feeling that he's not here at the moment. And I miss him. I was trying to include myself a bit more.
Yeah. He's on his way. We've blown the horn of Gondor, and he's.
I don't know what that means. Is that a sex thing? I don't know.
You wish. No, it's a Lord of
the
Rings.
I'm going to blow the horn of Gondor.
No.
I'm going to blow it later.
No.
I'm going to blow it all over my hotel room.
See what happens when we don't have a guest or a plan.
I told you it escalates into trouble. We said that when we went on the Lakes podcast, didn't we?
Yes.
If we have a few that's just us, it tends to get a bit out of control.
Yes. Yeah. Mm. And after 1 week, like, thank you for all the lovely comments on episode 150.
Yeah, it was nice, wasn't it? Yeah, we're really nice.
Yeah. Once again, thank you for all the questions. We had some very thought provoking questions. Got us thinking, and got us laughing as well. So we hope you enjoyed episode 150. If you're just joining the show for the first time, it's not normally like this. Normally, there is actually like some semblance of a structure in place.
We've got a structure. We've done introductions, and now we've done the advert, and now we're moving on to a subject to talk about.
Yeah, but I didn't even really properly introduce Dan. I'll introduce him when he turns up.
Yeah.
No doubt.
I miss him.
Hail of glitter, he'll arrive into our lives.
He'll do a forward roll over his couch, and he'll be there.
But before we get started, I mean, this week we're going to talk a little bit about Awesome Comics, the actual issue of Awesome Comics, and how we created it. Now, we've tried to do this a couple of times, and it hasn't worked out. So we're just going to throw some questions at each other and just talk about the actual stories that we've got in the issues. And we're very proud of this comic, but I think since we started doing it, have we, apart from shamelessly plugging it on the show, have we really talked too much about the creation of it?
We did that one time, but then they didn't record. So other than that, we haven't really talked about the genesis of it. Yeah. Is it fair for us to talk about it before Danny gets here?
No. We'll wait until Dan Butcher arrives to talk about it. But we thought, seeing as Cardiff Independent Expo is coming up on June the 2nd, this Saturday, as you're listening to this, I believe.
Yeah. Oh, of course it is. We're early, aren't we?
Yeah.
We haven't been
to
Lawgiver yet. It's like a time travel.
I know. This is like time... Yeah. We're like Time Lords. Yeah,
I can't tell that joke. No, you know what I'm thinking.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're thinking. Stop it. As Cardiff Independent Expo is this Saturday, we will be launching Awesome Comics 2 there. So we're going to talk a little bit about our comic. We're going to talk a bit about some of the exciting guests that are going to be at Cardiff as well.
Okay.
Yeah, it should be a brilliant show. We're huge looking forward to it. And if you know, whenever we launch a comic, anyway, there's always a buzz of excitement, isn't there?
There is.
Yeah. Yeah, everyone talks about it. We become the number one trending topic on Twitter.
Yeah, the three people that retweet us.
Yeah.
Bring us right to the top of the pile.
Yes. Thanks, Mum.
Yeah. She knows I thanked her.
Yeah. You watch yourself, son. Oh, dear. But
to the mum jokes.
Yeah, before Dan joins us, and there's been a couple of comics topics that have just popped up recently. The first one I want to talk about is movie based. Now, we don't normally talk about like the movies, and I'm not gonna. There's no spoilers. We're not talking about stories or anything. I'm talking about release dates.
Oh yeah, you got the hump about this.
I have got proper first world problems. Anger about this.
You're smashing places up and
I'm just
kicking
grannies
in the street and stuff, and you're on the way
home. And don't get me wrong, everyone, I know how irrational it is to get wound up about stuff like this. It's just silly. It's all silly. You know, everything's silly at the end of the day.
Yeah.
But for those who don't know, and if you're in the UK, the next Marvel film hitting the cinemas is Ant-Man and the Wasp. Looks great. I'm hugely looking forward to it. I think it'll be brilliant. Now, the release date, I believe, in the States is July the 2nd, I want to say.
Okay.
And normally, the UK gets the Marvel films around the same time, maybe a little bit before if we're lucky. You know, we have been very fortunate. I know we're very fortunate to get them a week before.
Yeah, I know Vandal was a little bit pissed off that we got Captain America the week before they did.
Yeah, yeah.
Imagine
if
they got Captain Britain the week before us.
And that's we're hugely fortunate to have that. But this time it's the other way around. It's releasing everywhere else in the world, I think, on July the 2nd or around that time. And in the UK, it's releasing on August the 8th.
That seems ages away.
That's a month later. And I think, I when I found out, I had a little bit of a rant about it. I didn't go on too much because who wants to hear that? That's nonsense. They want to listen to it on a podcast.
Instead.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And from what I gather, it's something to do with the World Cup.
Ah, whatever. I didn't even know there was a World Cup this morning. What we should do is maybe do a GoFundMe page so that we can go to America and watch the movie.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's a good that's a good idea.
I wonder who could help talk us around about that. I don't know. Yeah, maybe we should contact him.
Pilcher. Although, to be honest, it's more like a go fuck yourself page. That's what it'll be.
Yeah, we've seen it. Fuck you all.
Yeah. I don't have a problem with everyone else seeing it first. That's not the issue. I just think it's a bit... I think a month in this day and age is... Yeah. It's going to be... I mean... Avoiding spoilers for like in the 2 weeks leading up to Infinity War was bad enough.
Yeah.
And, you know, I know lots of people say, oh, it's only Ant-Man and the Wasp. Yeah, but if you're really looking forward to it, you know,
maybe we're just going to have to say, fuck it, just bring the spoilers on. You know what I mean? We might have to just do a bit of that.
Yeah, yeah.
Just resign ourselves to
that. Yeah, I think I might have to. And that saddens me that, you know, that I have to resign myself to.
And it
don't get me wrong.
Me that you're sad.
Yeah, as I'm talking, I'm not sad about it. I'm enraged. No, as I'm talking about it, it's fresh. Give me 2 days. By the time this episode comes out, I really don't care.
Yeah.
I know. It was just one of those. Do you have this, Tony? Sometimes it's a rational sort of geek rage that comes up. Just out of nowhere, you're like, well, that costume doesn't look right. Or that, you know, this isn't. Oh, that casting is not right, or something like that. It's some sort of issue that you know is silly. It's pointless. In the grand scheme of things, in the world we live in, this is small fry.
Yeah, like when they brought Jean Grey back. Like when they did that, and I'm like, really?
Yeah.
Oh, I broke my poor little young man's heart, and now she's back again. But then they've done that about 400 times since, so I suppose it makes a difference now.
Yeah. Has there been a Marvel character that's actually stayed dead?
Interesting.
You can't even say Gwen Stacy because they bring in like alternate universes, and then
you always used to say Bucky, didn't you? But never.
Yeah, and then they brought him back, and he was really good.
Is Karate Kid still dead? I don't know.
See, for me, that reference is the 80s film.
Such a
what? Go on.
Oh, Philistine. Ah.
I'm sorry.
Okay.
Everyone knows that you're encyclopedia on the show, but anyway, like, that's just that just irks me. Like I know some of my listeners out there are going to like football, but I really don't care, and I don't care about the World Cup. I can skillfully avoid that. You know, that's fine. I don't begrudge anyone liking anything, but to say that, like,
I don't know. You know, if you quite like murdering people, I'd begrudge you that.
Well, I'm quite good at it though, Tony. Oh, I need to edit that bit out. Hang on. No, but in all seriousness, I don't think that people should necessarily like reschedule things to that extreme.
Yeah, that seems a little bit extreme.
Yeah.
Although,
I mean, it could be completely wrong. I mean, that it may be for other reasons, but
I think what will happen is they put it off for a month on the hopes that. I mean, I don't know enough about football, but historically, England don't really ever get very far, do they, in these competitions?
Yeah.
So. I don't know. Is it a month? How long is the football competition for? Is it a month? I don't know.
I think it's, yeah, I think it's about a month. I think it finishes around July the 15th, I think. So there's still...
Right. Where is it, anyway? What kind of, is it Qatar? Is this the one that's in Qatar?
It may be. You immediately know more than I do.
Yes. Only because I work in a sort of fairly macho environment where I have to pretend that I know anything about it.
Yeah.
You know, and I'd throw Hooters. In your cliche about, their heads dropped in the second half, mate. I'll tell you that now.
Yeah.
And people go, yeah, you're right. Yeah,
oh,
you're
did
right,
you see that display in the second half? Oh, yeah. What is it about Arsenal? They always seem to walk it in.
Mate, I'll tell you, their heart's not in it at the moment. There's something wrong with the team, and then I walk off, and people think I know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. That's kind of how you got through your life, really, isn't it?
Generally, yes.
Yeah.
It's how I got through this podcast, too. And how I got through my four marriages.
All the questions we'll have on the Facebook group about that. So I just thought it was a bit silly. It was I just can't believe it for such a. I mean, I think it's a big summer release. They haven't.
Yeah,
done it.
People will be at home watching football though. It's quite a popular thing. But I don't know. Is it the sceptics who've thought, oh, England love football? They're probably still good at it or something. We won't release it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it could.
You're not a sceptic, is don't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, good. Yeah, we'll make a copy of you. Yeah.
Wow. We'll see.
Oh well.
Yeah. I mean, like I say, as we're talking now, I'm completely over it. But I had.
Isn't it going to mean that loads of people are going to get Jekyll copies of it?
Probably.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would imagine.
It'll be on the internet somewhere, won't it? People will start watching it on there, I would think.
Yeah, if it's a whole month. That's the thing. It's like, it's a month.
Yeah.
I mean, a week, 2 weeks is fine, but we live in an age where if you want to avoid spoilers, you just have to pretend that the internet doesn't exist.
I know. But you know what will happen? A whole movie will appear online in the form of 4-second GIFs. If you join them all up together from a Marvel movie, you can probably get the whole fucking movie at this point.
Yeah, yeah. Marvel always do this where they release the clips, don't they? Watch the first 6 minutes of this film.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Yeah. But anyway, that was my little rant. It wasn't as bad as I thought. I thought.
Well done you. That went okay.
Yeah. I thought it was... it wasn't too bad, actually. Mm. And the other one that I spotted on the journey home, there was a little bit... I don't know if this is still going online.
Okay,
but there was a little conversation between two creators.
This is the one you sent me.
Yes.
Okay. Yes.
From Jim Zub, there was a little bit of interaction between Jim Zub and Eric Larson.
Yeah.
Both creators we've mentioned on the show before. And when I say there was interaction, nothing kicked off. This isn't a nightmarish thing, but I thought it was quite an interesting topic of discussion.
Yes, I think you're right.
Yeah, and I think he's Jim's still working at Marvel at the moment. He's been working with Marvel for a couple of years. I want to say a year.
Yeah,
or
two. He's been working on the Avengers, isn't he? I think with Al Ewing and Mark Waid and all sort of people. Yeah,
and that may be what this is from. But anyway, he tweeted and said another design peak. This time for Mystery and Madripoor. I'm not going to say the names for all the Twitter handles, but basically someone updated the Femme Fatales. Originally created by Eric Larson, and we added a couple of new members, Viper and Sapphire Styx. And then there's a little image of like the new designed Femme Fatales. If anyone doesn't remember Femme Fatales or has basically never heard of them, it was in the 90s, wasn't it? They arrived.
What issue was it? Because you sent me a screen capture of it, didn't you?
Yes, it was. Hang on, I did find it.
Yeah.
And now I've lost it. Ah, there it is.
Is it 340? Issue 340.
Yeah, 340.
Amazing Spider-Man.
Which was an issue that I had when I saw that cover. I remember that. Yeah. And the Femme Fatales were a group of female villains, all very distinctive designs. And co-created by Eric Larson. I think also there was someone else working with him on it. But he certainly did all the designs. So basically, they're in a new Marvel story. Jim Zub and another artist are working on for Marvel. So they basically redesigned them and added a couple of new characters to the team. And Jim's obviously been excited about it, so he posted it up. And he copied Eric Larson onto it because I guess he wanted to just name drop the original creator.
I think he said something like he'd feel bad without name dropping him if he hadn't done.
Yes.
Like, damned if you do, damned if you don't.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. And Eric Larson replied, really? This is something I would rather not have shared with me. I put a lot of effort into character design, and having somebody tell me they're tossing my work out the window doesn't make me at all happy. These redesigns look like generic women going clubbing.
That, I mean, that's to which you sent me a message saying, if women go clubbing like this, we need to go clubbing more.
Yeah, true. True story. Now, I can understand where he's coming from to a certain extent. Jim immediately replied, sort of, like Tony said, he said he sort of stuck between a rock and a hard place, because if he didn't credit Larson, the internet probably would have jumped on him. And and he just say, sorry if the designs don't work for you. Not sure what to say at this point without it getting even more awkward. And then Larson made it a little bit more awkward.
You're probably tired of hearing me say I'm never in agreement with everything anyone says.
Yeah.
You know, I agree with some things and I don't agree with other things. I'm not one of these people who hear or worships people and everything they say must be right. But I think there's certainly an element of truth to both sides of this, I've got to tell you.
Yeah.
You know, I think poor old Jim Zub, who knows why he's included these characters in a story. It might be an editorial dictate, you know.
Yeah.
They said, oh, we want Viper in this group or something. So he's written it and somebody has redesigned them. But I do think that the redesigns are lackluster. I think compared to the original designs, which are very much in Larson's wheelhouse, aren't they?
They're very much sort of 90s superhero, Marvel superhero sort of character design. You certainly
or they could come out of Savage Dragon. I mean, they look like they could currently be in Savage Dragon, because he's got that style about him, isn't he? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, completely.
And I think, I don't know, I just sort of, I think there's a bit of, you know, I'd probably be disappointed, but then again, he did do it as work for hire, so they are characters owned by someone else.
Yeah, that's where, because I can see what he means, and Larson followed it up saying, imagine if you will, hiring me to draw a cover of a book that you wrote, and then me just ignoring whatever character design and drawing whatever I felt like for your first issue cover, you'd be understandably upset. That's not your character. I can see where he's coming from with this, and it's certainly a little bit murky. I mean, at the end of the day, I think Jim Zub is just excited about the story that he's done. He just wanted to show a bit of design work, because who doesn't love seeing like character designs and work in progress and stuff?
Yeah.
And it's probably these characters. When were the last time these guys were used? I mean, you read Marvel.
I don't know.
Exactly.
No, I'm not sure, mate. No, they're not a highlight of anyone's run.
Yeah, and without a doubt, I mean, I'd imagine it's like, Jim Zub was probably, I want to use these characters, and maybe the editorial team were like, well, let's give them a refresh. You know, they haven't been used for so long.
Yeah.
That may be the simple, that's what's happened.
I agree. And I really like Jim Zub. And when, what was the Barbarian comic he broke through with?
Skull Kickers. Skull Kickers is fantastic. Yeah.
When I bought the first issue of that, I bought it off him at New York, and I had a long chat with him. And he was sort of, you know, it wasn't a notable book at that point, and a really nice chat with him, and he was a really sweet guy.
Yeah.
But I do think there's perhaps something bigger here to worth discussing is they are slightly banal redesigns.
Yeah.
They look a little, if I saw the first set of characters in a comic on a cover, I think, yeah, fuck yeah.
Yeah.
If I saw this lot, I'd certainly wouldn't say that. However, the images that he posted of, there's no real personality to any of them.
Yeah.
Because they're drawn so small almost. You know?
And it's taken out of context, isn't it? It's a character sheet. Until you see it in the story, you can't really tell. Oh, who's that? Who's that at the door?
Oh, who's at the door?
Is that? Oh, Dan. Hello.
Hello.
Hello. Come in.
We're just discussing the Erik Larson.
We are indeed. Yes. Dan Butcher, the creator of Vanguard, everyone.
Hello.
Hey. Add some applause effects. Yay.
Yeah. Yay. Like Norm from Cheers. Yes, we were just discussing the Erik Larson character design. Well, Erik Larson, Jim Zub character design debate. It wasn't an argument. I don't think this wasn't super heated. This isn't one of these, oh my God, the internet's kicked off and everything's on fire. It's just an interesting talking point, because I can understand, if you design characters for someone and then in the future they get redesigned, you know, maybe you get your nose put out of joint, but it is, if you look at it just purely by numbers. It's work for hire, is it? Like you said, Tony, it's work for hire.
Yeah.
It's someone else's property. It's someone else's. You know, when you sign the
dotted line, does it mean that you're not invested in it though?
You can be invested in it. I'm invested in everything I do. I mean, I did. It's completely different. We're talking like apples and oranges here. But when the Hellbound Media guys asked me to do a Mandy the Monster Hunter story, she had had several designs of her armor that other people had used. They said, every artist has a different way of doing it. Feel free to do your own way. So I designed a new armor. And in the new comic, Lyndon White is brilliantly doing some amazing work on that. But he's not using my armor. Do you know what I mean? And there was a
bastard.
I was pleased with what I did, but I know that it's not, at the end of the day, it's not mine. It's so I can't be too beholden to it because other people can.
Guess it, like the Batman armor. Like there are only a few key indicators on that what it is, and the rest of it's kind of up for play.
Yeah.
The only thing I'd say about, I don't really know the characters too well. I think I've seen them in like a Spider-Man anthology I had.
Yeah.
But yeah. They do seem very stripped down and kind of lacking character. Like if you color swap the palettes on them, I don't think you'd be able to tell what character was what.
They're lacking any sort of definition. I'd like to see them done with more detail. Yeah.
I mean, there's one character called...
they're all the same shape. They're all the same.
Yeah. There's one character called Knockout, and in Eric Larson's sort of design, you know, she's quite stocky. You know, she looks like she could break you in half.
I know, that character's like, holy fuck.
But none of the new character designs look like that at the moment. It'll be interesting to see what they're like on the page of the actual book.
You know when you go to fashion shows and someone's drawing all the dresses?
I do that all the time. I do that all the
time. Yeah, I know, yeah. But it looks like those sort of, it's all the same model type.
Yeah.
And they've just sort of added different colours and shapes to their skin type costumes almost.
Yeah. You
know? To be speak for on Jim Zub's part, we don't know what kind of brief he's been given by whoever.
It might be an editorial thing.
Because they could say, look, we don't want this. We want a kind of simpler look like this, and he's fulfilled that. So
yeah.
I would say they're a lot less interesting than.
I don't know who the artist is. Who's the artist on it?
Is it named
in the piece?
It's named on the tweet, but I don't know who quite that is.
Okay.
Why have they gone all the way back for them, those characters?
No,
probably because they haven't been used in a long time.
Yeah,
but you know what I mean. I don't know.
Yeah,
but it seems odd. What were they? They're kind of the aim, presumably, to say, oh, we need a team of female characters, and then they've scanned through the archives trying to find the prerequisite characters.
Yeah, but let's put it.
Tony Silas is the guy.
Oh, right.
Who's drawn him? Yeah.
Let's put it this way then, you know, Marvel bring either of you two onto a project to do your run on something, and they say, well, you use these characters, you can redesign them if you want. They haven't been used in 10, 15 years. They maybe need a little bit of a freshen up, but you know, you can redesign them if you want. Do you? Do you see that as a creative opportunity?
Yeah, I think that depends on the character.
Yeah.
I think if it's a character that's been about since the Golden Age and has appeared quite a few times,
yeah,
I think the ownership level's different.
Yeah.
I don't think there's a huge ownership level on these ones because they're sort of fairly briefly used characters.
Yeah.
But if it was something that was quite well known to one artist, maybe, you know, then I would certainly reconsider and consider contacting the artist, maybe, or the writer. Artist. You
just say, we're going to be doing this.
I'd love your opinion.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean? Then, you know,
I mean,
We probably do it amongst ourselves. If you were going to do a, you know, if I was going to write a Vanguard story and I was getting Nick to do it, then we'd certainly speak to you about it. I know it's different. It's great, right? Yeah. But you know, there's that boundary, isn't there? But
I wouldn't go as far as the changes have been made. Like on the Knockout character in Eric Larson's one, basically he's got a costume that reveals all their front. And I personally wouldn't have that. I would have it kind of a bit more refined, but certainly I wouldn't have gone to the extreme which they've gone, because they seem to have just stripped them of any of the defining characteristics.
Yeah,
personality of the characters. I mean, that the Knockout one is like, fuck, that's a massive kind of powerful woman.
Yeah.
And then you've got the other one, which is a bit spindlier with the kind of the brain in the jar and the head. And that seems to be like taken back so far to the point where it's almost irrelevant. But
yeah, because when you look at the original, was it 340? Did we say, Tony, that Amazing Spider-Man?
Yes, it was. Yeah.
Each one of those has a very clearly defined visual look and character.
Yeah.
Even if it's just in the shade of their face, you know, or you know, you don't necessarily have to keep that character design. I would say,
no.
But I think one of the things about the new designs is like we've said, there's nothing really distinguishing them. There's one that's actually there's a brain, isn't there?
And
he does that quite a lot, though, doesn't he, Lars? And that's a bit of a favourite move of his, isn't it?
But in the new character designs, that character doesn't really. There's nothing really standing out. It just
All right.
It almost looks like a swim cap.
Let me put the two of this to you then. What redesign do you think has worked?
Captain Britain.
Right. Okay.
I mean that's still an old school one because he was
from the red to the Brian Braddock. Yeah.
But that's purely. I mean, I'm going to say that because that Captain Britain costume is one of my favourites. I know, Tony, you're a fan of the original one, aren't you? But
I don't mind the new one, mate. I just kind of like the Bronze Age-ness of the original one. But I don't know. I like them both, to be fair.
Yeah,
I couldn't decide. I've got a statue, like a bust of the original one, because it took me back to when I was a kid and I remember buying Captain Britain issue one. But yeah, okay,
That's a tricky one.
I'm going to say. Oh God, it's so difficult, isn't it? Because you kind of fall in love with the characters when you first see them, don't you?
Yeah.
You know,
One that I think's been revised to be more modern is the Punisher one, obviously, because virtually every single, like the white gloves and boots, has been stripped back for the skull.
Yeah, even works better for a modern age.
Yeah, definitely.
You know,
it's been like the ammo pouches are now the bottom of the skull bits and stuff like that.
Yeah, and certainly Wonder Woman. They've made her a little bit more sort of warrior-like, haven't they? Added a bit more armor to her.
She's had various versions, hasn't she? She's had sort of. Yeah. She's been about for so long.
I mean, you've had those versions where they give her trousers, and all of a sudden, everyone loses their shit for no reason. But
one that they never ever seem to be able to get right is old Supes. Like whenever they kind of, you know, like sometimes
redesign.
They do, like with the briefs, and they kind of remove them and put like these belt buckle things on to suggest that, and it just never really works for me.
I tell you, when the new 52 came around and Superman was redesigned, it wasn't the losing of the red pants, as it were, as we commoners say, that didn't bother me so much. It was the fact that he looked like. He's wearing armor, and he had like these big sort of metallic boots, and it was the metallic boots that I was like, really? No.
It was a sort of noodling that that Jim Lee did on all the costumes that made it look like they were all made by the same person.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. Yeah, I think a lot of that didn't work for me.
It's the equivalent of us wearing toilet paper armor. It's utterly useless.
I don't know. Well, I mean, some of them, the redesigns were done just because they weren't working. So you got to look at Daredevil when he had the yellow and black costume, and then he went to the red costume. That worked. Or you had the Incredible Hulk when he was grey, and then he became in the red costume. You know.
Yeah.
There's a few that were just done like that, weren't they? Batman, when he originally came out, he had guns, didn't he? And he was sort of so those
purple
were
gloves.
Yeah. Oh, was it? Okay.
Yeah, purple gloves as well.
Right. Okay.
Oh God, that's a real tough question.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. What do you think hasn't worked, then? Give an example of a costume you don't think has worked. I'll tell you one that has worked is Luke Cage. I think with the changing in fashions, I think he went from being this sort of funky disco guy.
No, I think that's a major thing that you said there, the changing in fashions. You know, and that's fashions, trends, etc. Surely that's what came into this femme fatale sort of redesign, because, you know, the Marvel comic characters, especially, I would guess, they're street level villains, and a lot of those sort of street level villains they're not the spandexy sort of, you know, they're not super sort of, they don't wear the same costumes as the heroes a lot of them these days, do they? I find that a lot of these villains don't look like they originally looked, especially if they're C, D list characters. They've changed, you know, they've changed them all the time. I know the Wrecking Crew characters. The Wrecking Crew, for instance, I will say I prefer. They haven't changed too much in a lot of ways.
They haven't, have they, too much? No.
The only one that's changed most is Bulldozer, the one that wears orange with the metal He's got like the cover up his face, which I prefer the original design myself. But
yeah,
okay,
you know
what character hasn't really changed then? What one do you think? It's a hard one, isn't it?
Yeah,
I mean, the Hulk, obviously.
Yeah,
the Thing.
Yeah, the Thing. Yeah. Did, I mean, they changed the uniform that he's in, but
a little bit here and there, haven't they?
Yeah,
yeah, and he had a sort of vesty thing for a while. And
I quite liked when he had that mutation. You know, when he got all kind of spiky.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, that wasn't too bad.
Yeah.
But I guess because he's kind of like such a nice, lovable guy, the kind of the roundness suits his character a bit more.
Yeah.
But to me,
Plastic Man's been the same for pretty much
60, 70
years now, isn't he?
Yeah.
Isn't that something to do with the fact that like he kind of, he's frozen in that form that he can't adopt any other look? Is that right?
I'm not sure, actually.
I don't know. Yeah.
Because he's permanently, he's always got the glasses and that kind of weird fucking red top.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll tell you a design that did work for me was Swamp Thing when they made him more sort of, I don't know,
organic.
Leavesy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Yeah. I quite like that.
Yeah.
Same... John Constantine hasn't really changed, has he?
Yeah.
No.
One thing they keep. 30 odd
years.
Tweaking is the Spider-Man one, and that's just for me. It's like reinventing the wheel. You don't need to do anything with that costume.
Yeah,
it's great. I know everyone has their own little spins on it, but
I think that's one of the great costumes. I think one of the greatest.
To me, the Spider-Man costume needs to be the one he pulls on, climbs into in a back alley in New York, so he can web spin away.
Yeah.
I don't want it to be something that appears from his watch or with some kind of weird armor.
Yeah,
or you know, or special legs turn out of it, or anything like that. I just want him to be this 20-something-year-old kid who like has to hide somewhere to get changed, and
you
know, web his clothing under a bridge that then falls off, or you know, is that sort of thing.
Yeah, exactly.
I tell you one costume sort of redesign, update style or whatever that was so massive it affected pretty much everything we see today, and that was when Adi Granov did Iron Man.
Yeah.
With Warren Ellis.
Yeah.
Because as soon as he did that, that Iron Man is what was in Iron Man 1, the first film. And like
Iron Man. The Extremis?
Yeah. Which is one of the best, one of the best Iron Man stories, if you ask me. I love that story.
Warren Ellis is a clever guy, and he writes big ideas like that world, doesn't he, I think?
Yeah.
He
kind of approached it from a very kind of real world, very real world approach.
It was brutal. It was a brutal series, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And like with the design, like just after that was, that's the way you got to do it nowadays. Like look at it as though it was real.
And they brought him on for the movies. They got that artist and said, right, help us conceive the suit for the first film. And look where we are now.
He was at London Super Comic Con. It was just, I was like, a lot of time people weren't going over to see him, and it was like, oh, fucking hell, there's like Adi Granov over there. Like,
he does a lot of cons actually. He does. Nights as well, I think he's quite often at that.
Yeah, if you get a chance, go up and see him, because he is an amazing artist. He doesn't
do
enough. Yeah. I mean, he's making movie concept art books these days, I presume. But
Mad cream.
What did he say? Cool.
Making that mad cream.
Yeah.
Tony threatened to do that earlier.
Or was it I was blowing my horn of Gondor or something?
Dan would have got that reference.
Yeah. What is that from Game of Thrones or something?
Lord of the Rings.
Lord of the Rings.
Oh, right. Oh, I don't want to tell okay.
There was a guy in my office, and he's a massive Lord of the Rings fan, I heard. And he loves the books, but he'd never seen the films. I was like, fuck me. They've been like about 10 odd years, haven't they? 10, 15 years.
Yeah, at least. Yeah, more, I think.
He's never seen them. I thought, oh, okay, I don't know how you'd resisted that.
Did you bully him because of that?
No, I haven't had a chance yet.
Yeah, okay, good. Yeah.
That's in the post.
Oh, dear. Anyway.
Yeah, on the train home tonight, saw a bit of almost fisticuff action, which was pretty good.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, I had to step in and sort of...
You had to good step man. In?
Arm it down, yeah.
Oh, this, come on, Dan. We got to hear more.
It's all the bollocks that was going on with the trains.
Yeah,
they were saying, oh, you can go this other way, other route home. So there was a couple of us doing it. And there was one guy who was a bit leery, and the ticket inspector came out to him and started giving him fucking shit about, well, this is the wrong ticket. And it was getting a bit heated, and I went over and I said, look, I'm in the same boat. It's fine. And showed him the Twitter thing. and then they proceeded to say how they were going to chin each other. And Zenama, the guy who was the ticket inspector, good, just under 7 foot, massive. And he said, oh, many men have tried, none of them have done it. And he goes, yeah, I was like, because it's bantering back and forth. It's like, well, the bigger they are, the harder they fall, mate. Obviously, we're
oh, Christ. Well, they're just talking in cliches.
Yeah. I think that was at the point where Dan locked himself in the toilet.
Yeah, no, so I've like, got to tell you, when people start talking in cliches like that, you know they're not going to have a fight.
Yeah,
no, people are going to have a fight are just going to hit each other, aren't they? Yeah.
You know? So they said, I was like, easy, enough. And they sort of just stopped. And I thought, I'm going to have a pop at this ticket inspector. And I turned around, and I can't remember what his name was, Patrick. I said, Patrick, you could have handled that better. You really escalated that situation. That's you saying that. That's you saying that. So, yeah, it is me. And I'm a commuter and I've got nothing to do with this bloke. So. He's a real jobs man.
I hate Patrick.
Yeah.
Excuse me.
I'll tell you what, though. God bless Dan Butcher. Where would we be without him?
Hero, the people.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Mm. There'd be violence in the streets. Blood in the streets if Butcher wasn't around.
I could have waited, set back, and there could have been violence. That's a bit of a choker. But I filmed that. I could have had that on fucking YouTube.
Yeah. Think of the likes you could have had around that.
Oh, man. I will reconsider that next time.
Yeah. I've got something to talk about.
Go on.
It's a tweet that you liked, actually. You retweeted, Vincent, that from James Gunn, the director of... what was he directed other than Guardians of the Galaxy? Sergeant Kabuki Man or something, is he?
Slither. Yeah. He was the writer of Dawn of the Dead and Scooby-Doo 1 and 2.
Oh, Christ. I never knew that about him. Okay. Well, he tweeted earlier, I never understand writers who say to wait for the muse or be in the right headspace to write. Accountants go to work no matter how they feel. Musicians play a show they've agreed no matter what. And writers need to sit down and write every day despite their feelings. What are your thoughts on that? I'm going to say I fucking agree with him.
Yeah, I've got to agree with him.
Yeah.
Totally.
I've mentioned this before. I don't believe in being blocked. People are going about, I'm so terribly blocked about my work and I can't write. You know?
Yeah.
What's stopping you?
Yeah.
I think if you're a professional and you're doing it to that level, there should be no reason whatsoever that you can't write. And even if you're having trouble coming up with something... You're trying to write a scene and that's not working. Try another scene. Do something else.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, just write anything. You know, there's all around you every day.
Exactly,
Just write about it, you know.
But just to sort of throw your hands up in the air and say, I can't do this. I mean, I'd love to do that in my job, but obviously I'd get the sack immediately.
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
Who wouldn't?
Yeah.
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 I've got work blocked today. Can't do it. Oh, fair enough, Dan. Go home. Try to get drunk then.
I'm really backed up today.
Yeah. It's not coming, the magic. It's not there.
Yeah, it's not working.
Go on, then.
Yeah. You've tried. You're a brave man.
Yeah. I mean, you know, we've all had it where what we're trying to write just isn't working. But just, you can just pivot and just write something. Like you say, Tony, just write something else. You know, anything.
Yeah.
I think. You can't. No one's going to feel sorry for you if, like, you spend 6 months saying, oh, I've had mental block, I can't write this because of, you know, then why didn't you just try writing something else?
It's just laziness, isn't it? I mean, I think Douglas Adams is the famous person for writer's block, and his favourite famous quote is, I love a deadline, I love the noise of it, is it whooshes past me and I ignore it, or something. I think it's the quote from him.
Right, yeah.
But I mean, he just basically said, no, I just used to like having three baths a day and I was a bit bored, you know.
Yeah.
But he didn't, you know, I don't, if he is a clever bloke. So it can't be lack of imagination. Then it's certainly not a medical condition like some people have you believe. It's just laziness.
Yeah.
Just so not
say,
writing.
Say, for instance, you're stuck on a scene, Tony. Like, I don't know, you say to yourself, I don't know how I'm going to resolve this or get these two pieces to fit together. How would you work that? How do you...
Well, I'm not under huge deadlines. I've got a few things I'm writing that I need to sort of crack on with, but I would just sort of think about it.
Yeah,
I'll dwell on it, and I'll write something else, another thing I should be writing.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, I have to get a couple of reviews out a week, and I have to get the mailer out every week, and I'm trying to get a few pages each day out for a script, about three or four scripts I'm writing. So I'll just switch to a different project and write that. But if I'm thinking, oh, how do I get out of this? How is she going to do this? Or how's he going to do that? I'll just have a think about it on the train.
Yeah.
Or wherever I am. And I think you soon overcome it. There's no reason you shouldn't do. It's not like, you know.
Yeah. I think like you, maybe you get this as well, Vince, like you'll be stuck in a bit of a script like that and you have a eureka moment when you're walking along and you'll be that bit. They can do. And then I email myself. I think you write it in a notebook, Tony, and then they can kind of fill in the script later on.
I mean, I've had scripts that are absolute bastards. Just, you know, something that doesn't click, you know, or I leave a page almost blank, you know, because as people know, I do like sort of mock-ups and then write from those mock-ups if I'm working for myself, you know, to draw. But if there's a lot of dialogue that I kind of know what I need to say but haven't got the right words at that time, I won't stop at that page. You know, I'll say kind of basically what the panels are, but I'll leave the dialogue blank and move on to the next page because I know what I'm going to say there. I don't think you should, you know, you can't let anything stop you, because as soon as you stop and slow down, that's a nightmare. I mean, like, there's a reason. I mean, how many people have written a first draft and had that printed?
George Lucas.
Ernie from American Ernie.
Yeah.
He used to write loads of plays, didn't he? Do you remember? I've written a play this week. Yeah, that was one of their jokes.
Missed me that one.
It's before your time.
Yeah. One thing I do on scripts is when you're kind of getting the bare bones of it down, I write dialogue very much on the nose. So a character say, "We've got to go up to the top of the mountain," and the other one's like, "Yes, let's do that."
Yeah, I like that.
When I do the second pass, I'd write it in the voice and try and get it shorter. Do you know what I mean? So they'd be like, it's up there. Like, yeah, right, or something like that.
Well, we're transitioning a little bit to talking about the comic, but I, on Cockney Kung Fu, I wanted everything. I genuinely think that people speak in shorter sentences than they do in fiction and in movies and in comics and books and stuff.
Yeah.
So I wanted it to be quick, sharp things that had meaning but weren't long expositiony things. You know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely.
So I wrote, so I had some trouble with the dialogue. I went back and rewrote a lot of the dialogue in that one because I wanted to make it quicker and carry the story, because it's quite a jaunty, bouncy story, mine. You know, where all of ours are, to be fair, but
yeah.
I want it to sort of bounce along and not be bogged down by reading loads of stuff, you know?
Yeah, like, same thing. There was when I was doing the Viper, the first part of it, I cut down a lot of text on when they're in the office talking, because there was a lot of stuff I wanted to get over, but it was just, there's too much here, it's too verbose, so I've got to kind of cut it down and trim it. And like you say, Tony, people will use three words instead of five, I found, when speaking. And I think it was a tip from the West Wing, one of the writers on that. They said, like, people rarely speak in complete sentences. They always break sentences up or leave the couple of words off and someone else to fill it in for them as they get back and forth. That's quite hard to do in comics.
To replicate, isn't it? Yeah, yeah. It really is.
Yeah, cause
and to make it readable.
Yeah, because I've had a challenge sometimes. When I write, I have a fairly sort of casual sort of dialogue-y way of, like, you know, people talking to each other. It's fairly quick. People are going backwards and forwards. Like you say, like West Wing style, you know, lots of, I mean, not as good as that, but, you know, there's lots of people shooting backwards and forwards.
Yeah.
You can't do that so much because otherwise your speech bubbles are going to be all over the shop.
Yeah.
And sometimes that's a ball ache to fit in, depending on what the art is doing with the speech bubbles. You have to really sort of think about what you're writing. That's an ongoing learning for me, like, just cutting down on the stuff that doesn't need to be there.
Yeah. I think you're right, mate, completely. And I think that's what a lot of people need to think about doing. Yeah. I've read a lot of small press comics that have got that are completely highly overwritten.
Yeah.
And don't forget, a lot of the communication, if you've got the right artist or you are the right artist, can be communicated through the art.
Yeah.
So you don't need to write, "I'm really angry about what you've done." You need to say, you need to get quickly to the point of it, because the face should communicate the fact you're angry.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Stuff like that.
Only communicate what you can't through the art, using the text, as it were.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's a perfect example, like illustrating a character being angry as opposed to saying, "I'm really angry with you." That's, yeah. That's fair.
I'm really angry with you. What do you think you've done? But you can show an angry face and then just say, what do you think you've done?
Yeah.
I mean, it works better because you don't have to double take on the image. You know?
And how many times have we talked about a comic where there's not that much dialogue, but it's all in the way a character looks at someone?
In my scripts, I write that in, but it's not always communicated. So there is that other side of it.
Yeah.
Where, you know, you say, oh, look, he's looking sad, he's feeling down, he's a bit, you know. But a lot of it is the vibe, so I'm giving the artist the sort of the mood that I want it to be in.
Yeah.
But I kind of know it won't be completely communicated because it's a difficult thing to communicate.
Yeah.
You know, anger and happiness are two easy things, aren't they? But,
yeah,
you know, being fed up maybe isn't so easy.
Yeah, those subtleties.
Yeah.
I think that's why sometimes writers have to go in and change, well, I certainly do change the text, or because the comic isn't communicating what you want, or it's communicating something slightly different and you have to kind of tweak it accordingly.
Yeah
you know what I mean,
with the lettering, because there's times where I've done something, well, it doesn't really look like he's fucking saying that, and then tweak it and then just make it work.
I've rewritten lettering, like dialogue in the lettering stage, usually stuff that isn't story, it doesn't change the story, but there's just a bit of dialogue that doesn't work, and like, you know, a way a character reacts to something, what they say is just not really gelling. Certainly with Murder Road, that's happened a couple of times. I've written it kind of on the fly as I'm lettering it, because I'm writing it,
that's fine.
I've got that freedom to do it, and it's just whatever works. And at those points sometimes you do realize that your script is a little more waffly than you think it is.
Is there anything you had to cut out of because we've only got 10 pages per issue for four issues, obviously 40 pages. There was like a lot I had to cut out, like some kind of side bits and bobs. Was there anything that kind of you cut out of yours that you thought, I really wish I had the chance to kind of explore that?
Yeah, there is for me, and I can't really talk about it because it comes later on. There's two characters who turn up. I wanted more from them. Do you remember the two that turn up? And she fights with them.
Yes.
Chapter. Yeah, there's two that I wanted more from them because I really like them, you know.
Yeah.
But not in the recent, not in the first two chapters. Yeah. No.
I would say certainly in the script, as it was, it was fairly tight with Murder Road because of the nature of it. You can't really bullshit. You know, you haven't really got the space it's very sort of action sort of led. But whilst devising it and certainly, you know, plotting it, there was certainly scenes or like deaths that were more drawn out, or, you know, certain events that could have had a page or two more, expanding them more, just showing a bit more. But then you've got to know, oh well, I've got 10 pages. In order to get to the cliffhanger of part two, can't have that scene.
Yeah,
I can't have those two pages, and they're fairly superfluous. I can add them later if I want. If that happens, maybe we'll see. But you know, it has to still work as it is now, which I'm quite pleased with how it's coming together. So
okay,
yeah,
because one of the things in Viper, in the second issue that people will hopefully be reading soonish, they go to a gym, and I wondered a sequence where Sloane's like, it starts off and he's checking out like dudes working in the gym and like admiring how great it is, and like, look at that dude's fucking bicep, etc. And I'm trying to hint at the fact that the reason he overcompensates for his sort of thing with girls is because he's a gay guy, and he's really trying to repress and shit like that. Like, so it's not like that on the nose, but kind of like hint at it, but because I've only got that certain amount of time to play with in the pages,
you lose that subtlety a little bit, I think, don't you?
So it's just like he's just a massive creep, and
for those people who don't we've sort of segued quite naturally into our topic of discussion this week. Obviously, our lovely listeners who have been with us since day one will know what we're talking about. But for those who don't necessarily know, as well as talking about making small press comics, etc., we decided to make one ourselves. which is and we've said it a few times. It feels like I'm saying it for like the 20th time, doesn't it? But but basically, we're releasing an anthology comic, which it contains. It's going to be 4 issues delivered over a year, and each of those issues contains a story. They're all ongoing stories. Best way to put it is how it says in it. Front cover, it says it started with a podcast, now it's an anthology, 3 stories told over 4 issues. Murderous ghosts, vigilante cops, street fighting femme fatales. Welcome to Awesome Comics. I almost went a bit Partridge there.
He did.
Yeah. But that's the way, you know, we're doing almost like a small sort of ongoing anthology sort of strip. But rather than it be like in those weekly comics that we've talked about quite recently, that would only have 3 to 4, maybe 5 pages, we've got 10 pages to play with. We have a 10-page chapter with each issue. We thought, even though we've tried to talk about it before on this show, it's either not recorded or something's gone wrong here and there, we thought we'd talk a little bit about the process of how we made it and stuff, which we already have, quite naturally. I mean, I was properly getting stuck into the scripting and plotting discussion then before I realised some people may not know what we're talking about.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah, so that's the background, folks. Folks, and we'll give you some links of where to get the comics and stuff, etc. And as issue 2 is launching in just a few days as we speak, as this episode comes live. So we're talking about the writing of it at the moment. So I think, Tony, let's go back to Cockney Kung Fu, because this is the one that existed before Murder Road and before Viper. Me and Dan had to jump onto the train after it was moving, as it were, when we decided to go.
Well, a little bit, but it was just sort of floating out there, wasn't it? It's a script that I wrote just for fun.
Yeah.
As I'm in the habit of doing.
Yeah.
And the only difference these days, and in no way larging myself up, is that we've got some people, artists, who sort of follow us. And if I post that I've done a script, some of them are keen to draw it, you know.
Yeah.
But I used to, back before the podcast, I used to write an awful lot of stuff. And it just used to sort of sit there because I didn't really know as many artists as I know now. So I wrote it for fun. Probably almost the first chapter anyway, probably about a year before. In fact, the genesis of it is I wrote it as the opening page, is the start of a Master of Kung Fu story I was writing that exists elsewhere and goes off in another direction. But the opening page of standing there in a sort of martial arts stance surrounded by dead bodies, or, you know, beaten bodies, was a Master of Kung Fu story that I wrote.
Okay.
Yeah, and then I sort of thought, oh, I quite fancy writing a female, and so I wrote that. And then I think all I did is I sent it to you guys to read. That was kind of just what we did, wasn't it?
Yeah,
I think.
Yeah.
And we're in the habit of reading each other's scripts and then just having a chat about it. And I just thought, oh, I'll send you this silly thing, you know. And to be fair, it was in my mind that I'd quite like to do it as a comic, but I thought, I don't know how I'll get to do this, you know. And then you guys said, right, we're doing a comic, and you do have the advantage of actually having some form of talent and be able to draw it as well. and I was like, fuck me, what am I going to do? And then fortunately, Mr. P jumped out and said, I'd quite like to have a look at it, and he was up for doing it. So,
I mean, Tony, you know, that's where we went with it. You're doing yourself a disservice there. I mean, because we could tell from that script that it was a cracking piece of work anyway.
We received a lot of feedback about Cockney Kung Fu.
Yeah.
Like, really good feedback.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, we have. Yeah, it's been really nice, actually.
Yeah.
It's sort of, apart from one review, I think everyone's liked it. You know, it's sort of quite nice. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I've not seen that negative review, so it's all
you have.
It's all...
You have seen it. It gets referred to as a couple of different words.
Okay. You know, it's all gold in my mind.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And even though Cockney Kung Fu certainly one of the strips in the comic, even though we've seen bits and bobs here and there, that's the one that I kind of know nothing until I get the final pages. It's the same, actually.
Oh, okay.
It's the same with Viper. I mean, Dan has sent me and Tony some basic outlays of, you know, this is the way the story's going to go, and then he'll develop it. But it's not really until I see those final pages that everything kind of clicks in place. And I read it properly. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes sense. I find it, I much prefer the getting the finished pages as opposed to the script.
Yeah,
because what
it's fun to read it that way as well, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, I wrote part one of Murder Road and drew that, and I sent you guys a script for part one, didn't I? First,
yeah.
And then once that was done, and it wasn't a complete disaster. And because I knew where the story was going to go, I just thought, let's do it. Let's go for it. So I scripted 2, 3, and 4, which I've never done before. But and also because there's a lot of action, there's not a great deal of dialogue or introspective looking at how the world works. It's a horror movie after all. I just went ahead and did it and just barreled along. And then I sent like Tony and Dan like the basic outlines of 2, 3, and 4. But certain things, you know, dialogue is going to change by the time it hits the final page. You know, I'm going to see when I'm working on it that certain dialogue doesn't work. But it was handy to send it to them just to know that it did all fit together. It did, you know.
Yeah.
I was just writing it, just thinking, oh, well, oh my God, I've done it. Amazing. But you need someone else to look at it, just sort of say, you know, oh, that works. Yeah, that's great. Mm. Or actually, that bit doesn't make sense. You know, I think it is handy. You can't be too much in a bubble when it comes to writing, can you?
No, definitely not.
Yeah. So, yeah, that was my murder. Yeah, so Murder Road is all... Dan, you've scripted out... I mean, obviously, part one and part two is done, isn't it?
Yeah, but I've got the kind of the beats for 3 and 4.
Yeah.
Essentially, it's a kind of... I didn't mean it to do it this way. It's like a three-part act where act one is... One obviously, and act two is part two, but 3 and 4 are essentially the one long, sort of finishing shit going, shit going off. But you kind of it's always difficult. We've said this before about first issues because first issue has to be a lot of setup, and you kind of so much of the readership, your continued readership rests on getting people in and keeping them on that first one because if you don't kind of give them a good glimpse of what the story's got in store for the first issue, they're unlikely to go for the second one.
Yeah, and I don't know about you, Dan. It's something that certainly I could say I was concerned about because my story is pretty much trying to set up an atmosphere. And there's nothing. It's only really at the end that you know things are about to kick off. So
So
I'm hoping people will join us for issue two because issue two is when.
It kicks off.
In quite a way. I mean, I like to think. But you know, certainly with
you need that build up for your one, definitely.
Yeah.
But like for instance, Cockney Kung Fu, immediately, you know, you just had this, you know, you were in the world and you had this massive sort of action scene like through part one. I mean, you had people like immediately. And I think certainly with my story, if I'm looking at it, I think it has to say it will probably I like to think that maybe it's part two is when I'll have people.
I get you. I saw part one as a prequel, to be fair, because it is a different story than the rest of it. So if you look at part one as a prequel and then part two is the first of a three act story, that's kind of where I was going with it,
right?
Because it's punchy and it ends with the setup about to begin in the first issue.
Gotcha.
And the second issue is the setup and the beginning of the execution of what happens.
Yeah. Because you've almost got like, I mean, the first issue of the comic, you set up a mood, don't you? You immediately set up the style, the mood, the atmosphere. You've done that. And then it's almost like issue two is almost your like setup, you know, kind of what me and Dan were doing in issue one. Is kind of what you're doing. That's the way.
I wanted you to care about her. Do you know what I mean? I think putting her into that because she doesn't quite win. She only just wins that fight because she's knocked down and she's almost beaten in the first issue. And I wanted you to care about her. So when she walks into the thing that they're planning as of the end of issue one and they're about to execute it, I want her to have a certain vulnerability about her where it's not going to go well. You know, it's kind of reasoning, you know.
Hero to be completely and utterly untouchable.
Yeah,
exactly. Because she's otherwise you could consider to be sort of unbeatable kung fu martial artist. You know, and what could possibly happen to her? But that's certainly when you've read parts 3 and 4. You know, that's not what happens.
Yeah,
you know?
I mean, the story certainly goes in a different sort of direction than you possibly think it's going to go, and I think that's one of the advantages of it. You've got to keep people guessing, haven't you? Really.
So we'll see. We'll see. Like interesting to see what people because I know. The Lakes, when they reviewed it, they said, I fucking haven't got a clue where it's going now. And
And I like that. I like the fact
yeah,
that
it's great.
That.
And it, yeah.
And I think, what's the name of the lady on the lakes? I forget her name now.
Nikki?
Nikki. Of course it is. Apologies, Nikki. But when Nikki said, I'm really looking forward to reading the second part because of that, I think that's, I thought, well, that's good. That she's got that. She knows why that is.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So,
And
like, Nick kills it on issue two, by the way. Oh, God,
yeah. Yeah, he does.
Nick Prolix is just absolutely smashing it. Which is fantastic, especially for all the little details that you see in the background.
There's a police car in issue three, and he's gone and bought a little miniature corgi.
Nice. Yeah. There's going to be another issue three. Is going to be another car-tastic issue.
Yeah, it is, isn't it?
Yeah. Cars.
Yeah.
Fucking cars.
Yeah, Dan's just about to get into that himself as well. I have less cars to draw, but you'll find out why when you read the issue. In terms of like my part two, it's because when we had the reviews, and thank you to everyone that reviewed issue one, by the way, we really appreciate it. And we had some really well thought out and genuinely thoughtful and enthusiastic reviews for a comic that I don't think you can put into a genre. I don't. It's a mashup of everything. I mean, I don't think it's Grindhouse because they're all quite, you know, it's not. It's Grindhouse in the sense of like you got different stories put back to back, but you know, there's nothing supremely grungy about what we're doing.
No,
We're putting our heart and soul into these things. But certainly in those reviews when they were looking at Murder Road Part 2, a lot of people were saying, and it ends with stuff, bad stuff about to happen. And I was like, oh, and that got me excited because it's like, right, people, obviously the cliffhanger worked. I love a cliffhanger. You know I love a cliffhanger. Yeah. And I've tried to do one at the end of every sort of chapter of this. But and I think that's why I'm so excited about issue 2, is because that's when it finally hits the rhythm that it is in my head, if you know what I mean. It becomes what it has to be. But
if you started off with a car just smashing into people, it wouldn't work, would it? Because there's nothing for the reader there.
Yeah.
It's just, oh, what's this?
Yeah. Because it's all about atmosphere, isn't it? I'm trying to go for like a slower atmospheric sort of
slow burn.
Yeah, a John Carpenter style thing.
Well, I say slow burn. It's 10 pages till it gets going, which isn't that much, really.
Yeah. And hopefully it rolls along. I think all three of our stories roll along at quite a pace.
Yeah.
You know, it's a quick read, but in a good way, I think, our comic. It's
one of the things, after reading so many anthologies over the past couple of months at least, it's made me appreciate the writing, when you come across it, the really good writing, like there's a story a few pages or four pages long and they nail what they're trying to do in those pages. There's a lot of times I see it doesn't work and it's like, well, yeah, okay.
Yeah, gotcha.
But it has to be so strong. The less space you got to play with, the stronger it has to be. And doing four-page stories and stuff like that, I really take my hat off to people who can accomplish that. Because
we gave ourselves
difficult.
A bit more rope with 10 pages. But even that, just trying to pace it in a certain way, to finish it in a certain way, with any sort of anthology, especially an ongoing story, it's all about pacing, isn't it?
Because every sort of scene has to kind of end at that 10 pages. So like anything that's outside of that bit has to obviously get shredded, which is...
And the good thing about us doing it for ourselves, it's all about freedom to do what we like as well, isn't it?
Exactly.
That's why often I quite like that. I'd find it difficult to work under the old sort of 70s and 80s where this had to happen in each issue. And, you know, I want that real sort of area where I can play about with stuff, you know. And I'll tell you what I like around writing as well is stretching yourself to write different kind of stories.
Yeah.
So we've all done it recently. We've all written like all ages stories. We've written this, you know.
Yeah.
We've written for little heroes, and you know, there's all these different books that we've written or drawn, you know. And I like that a good writer should have. I'm not saying we're good writers, but a good writer should have the ability to be able to write in any genre, for any age group, for any sex, for any, you know, it should be the ability they have.
Yeah, I think feel like you kind of need those different experiences. They jar something deep inside, allowing one to grow. There you guys quoting June there.
Oh, hey. Oh, bloody hell.
Yeah.
Yeah, but every morning I tweet out a Dune quote. I quite like that.
The spice will flow.
Yeah, masters and trying other stuff, and you realise the limitations of what you can do or can't do in one, and vice versa. Yeah. I think it enables a greater understanding of what you can do with stuff.
Definitely. So Dan, what was your journey to Viper like? Because obviously, everyone here, they know you from Vanguard, the webcomic, and you've done sort of guest art for other people's strips or anthologies, and certainly like complete issues in themselves, like El Marvo, etc. But what was the challenge like of like creating something sort of new and original for you to sort of do completely yourself, and to have that 10-page sort of limit?
Well, when you said it, you kind of said, I think you mentioned it on air off air about doing the anthology, the story, and sort of this. I don't know what it was about those super vehicle shows of the 80s. I always thought they were filled with so much promise, but they never delivered.
Yeah.
And then I thought I'd kind of take that and kind of work in all the stuff I like and just make it a bit of a laugh and do something maybe I wouldn't do with Vanguard, which is a bit more serious, and just, like Tony said, have fun and try and do something a bit different. So like you got that kind of the typical action hero who's kind of very blasé about women's feelings and totally not PC, and then the other side you got a character called Lopez, which is the female detective who's sort of very much of kind of our age and quite head screwed on,
the only one that who kind of knows what they're doing.
kind of real.
In that
the other ones all seem to be operating in like a movie or TV universe, where in the second issue there's a big fight in a gym, and the police, they're both police officers, in the end they just walk out. And it's like, well, that wouldn't happen in real life. You wouldn't just people attacking police officers. They beat them up and then they walk off. But in films, that would be, that's what you don't give the arresting them and stuff. You just, oh, off we go, and then that's the end of it. So there's it's stuff like that. Just like kind of having fun with it and playing around.
Because you definitely go for I don't want to say un-PC, because it's got a real satirical slant. Viper for me is like Paul Verhoeven doing like Street Hawk / Knight Rider. Do you know what I mean? It's that kind of it's very clever and knows what it's doing. And I hope a lot of readers get that. I mean, I will also say that you have some of the sickest jokes.
Yeah, you do.
There is a joke.
As soon as you said that, there's one joke that a woman at work turned her nose up at, I knew exactly which one that was.
Pretty brutal. I think I can't remember where I read it somewhere, I overheard it, and I was like, I'm fucking having that. And then like a tweet dip for use. And I was like, that's fucking grim.
Yeah, it is grim, but we want to know what our lovely listeners think of that joke. And you'll know what it is when you find it. I mean, I laugh every time I read it.
But then I'm trying to get the reaction of like the female partner, sort of like, Jesus, like really kind of disgusted by it. And to the point where she kind of just, it's what he does. And she just shrugs her shoulders and okay, that's what you do. But kind of puts up with it. But I don't want these. I said to the woman who kind of the lady who corrects does the proofreading, I said, look, this is the character saying this, it's not me, just want to make that clear. These are all characters. And
that's an interesting distinction to make, though, isn't it? Because do you think that some people can't really sort of make that in distinction
in this day and age? We've seen that loads of times in social media. It's like you can have a Nazi in your comic, it does not make you a Nazi.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
It's
just ridiculous. And even like they're saying, well, you can't write this character as being relatable. It's like, well, if he's the bad guy, in some respects, to make you a good writer, you've got to make what he's saying relatively relatable, even if it's monstrous.
Most bad guys are not bad guys in their own heads.
No. Like Thanos wanted to wipe out half the universe. People pointed out he's got the Infinity Stones, which he can kind of, he can solve the problem other ways. But his way of doing it is where he's come from, where they did that on his world. And that's the way he's tackling it. So you can kind of understand where he's coming from, but not, you can't really, you're not with it, you know what I mean? But you relate to where he's coming from.
And
so that's the, I don't worry so much about it, because I'm sure everyone all our listeners and readers are intelligent enough to know that the things that are said by our characters aren't.
Yeah.
Yeah, you'd be surprised. Hopefully our listeners are okay, but
yeah.
Yeah, there's a few people.
That's why
out there.
There's a couple of times where I've said to you guys, what about this? Is this okay? And most of the time you said, no, that's fine.
Or,
because I just want to kind of check that, not to push it too far. I realize there's a line, and sometimes it's very shady where that bloody line is. And it's
Viper is the one of the three, though, certainly so far, that is pushing it like that, I think. In a good way. That's what I mean. It's the one that's like, whoa. Like Dan's going there.
Yeah, I was kind of like, kind of go for it and push it.
Yeah, you shouldn't be afraid to do that with your art, I think.
No, I mean, also trying to put something in comics that you don't see much of, as far as I know, kind of like a lot of people want to do stuff like that, but don't. Like I've said it before, if you're going to write a story about subject X, fucking go for it. Don't lily liver about and half-ass it and do something that someone else might do. Just put everything in it and dial it up to 11, so to speak.
Yeah,
that's what I like to see in comics. That kind of echoes back to that kind of the costume designs we was talking about earlier. It's like I prefer the Larson ones because they're a bit more kind of extreme as opposed to playing it a bit safe.
But, yeah, I agree. Yeah, completely. Yeah.
So when it came to Cockney Kung Fu, then Tony, obviously, you've got it sort of mapped out.
Yeah,
I mean Nick is doing it issue by issue, like all comic artists do. What freedom is there for, like, you know, things to slightly change or, you know, adapt based on, you know, because I know you two have a fairly collaborative backwards and forwards, don't you?
Yeah, we do. If you read the mail out this week, I break down the last page of the last issue. And you'll see that there's quite a few different differences between the script and what Nick came up with.
Is that tinyletter.com, Cockney Kung Fu?
That's the one. Thank you very much. Yeah. 50th one came out today. Got 50 in a row. Quite pleased with that. 50. 2 more weeks. We've been going for a year. Yeah. So, yes, he did. And he would always run layouts past me. And we run out. We've said it before. We run one of those Trellos, you know, where we look at stuff. And on it, we've got all little questions and payments and, you know, layouts to find links and letters and stuff like that. But yeah, it has changed. I don't think it will change now significantly to the end of part four. The end of issue four, rather. It does extend beyond that, which we're currently talking about how we're going to do it. There is a sort of there's a different story to be told after that, which is quite substantially different, actually. Which I won't ruin, but I've told you guys about it.
Yeah.
But I don't think it will change now because, and I don't know why, I just think I've kind of written it now. You know, the scripts for this have been written for over a year now. And it's not behind me, but it's there and it's set out. And I've started writing all these short stories and stuff around the characters that appear in it.
Does that make it quite interesting to sort of look back and like talk about? Obviously, when people ask you questions about it, or, you know, like I'm doing now, and you're talking about something that kind of is not in your rear view because it's a current thing,
I think the only reason it's not is because I'm writing these stories, because you guys are like creating it as you go, you know, as you go along. You've written your stories more recently than I've written mine.
Yeah.
And because you're drawing it as well, you've got your fingerprints still on it. You're still touching it, as it were. Yeah. And I feel a little bit of distance. So because I'm kind of missing the characters from it, that's why I'm really, that and the idea that I wanted to expand the universe. I'm writing these and enjoying writing the short stories because it gives me, I'm back in that world, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
What I say in the mailer this week as well is I wrote all the characters in it in with the ability to, even characters who only have one line in it, and a couple of the characters who don't have any lines, I described them in a way that I could write another story about them. So at the end of issue one, you see there's two receptionists, and it's a man and a woman, and they're both dressed in sort of BDSM gear. And they're the receptionists for the sort of gang lords. And they've only got like one line or two lines, I think. But there's a story coming about them because I foresaw everyone I wrote as someone who could have their own spin-off series is kind of the way I approached it.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm enjoying doing about it. You know, Peggy, who literally has one line in the first issue, who's one of the prostitutes. I've written about 20,000 words about her so far now.
I read that one that was on the mailer. That was great.
Yeah.
Thank you, man. Yeah, really well done. Cool. Yeah. And even one of the characters, there's the guy who goes and grabs one of the prostitutes, and he's just a character in the background, you know. So it's an interesting way of doing it. I know you've decided that, Vince, haven't you? You want to write some short stories about the characters who appear in it as well, isn't that a plan?
Yeah, there is a short story about the car itself, because there's only so much you can do within the sort of pages that you have. And certainly, I've treated my story as basically like, you know, that VHS movie. It has a movie pacing to it, you know, there's a beginning, middle, and end. It sort of rushes through it. And because of the nature of that 80s horror kind of vibe, you can't really develop too much about, you know, what these people are, what this thing is, which is part of the beauty of it, because I don't want things really sort of overdeveloped and discovered. You know, the mystery's ruined when we know where Wolverine comes from. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, there is a bit of that, isn't there? Yeah, I'll get you.
Yeah, but there is potential to do other things, and I know like Daniel Mark Chant, who like helped me with the script and stuff. He's got a background in prose, so he just dropped a 5,000 prose short story about the car just in my inbox, and when I read it, it's quite trippy and dreamlike, but it shows you like a completely different side that it develops it without showing too much, which is why I love it. So that you'll see that in the future at some point. It won't be in the pages of this comic, but there are other things in the future. But yeah, I've plotted it out, and in my head I've already got a sequel. If that makes sense. I already know where the sequel's going to go. So I'm playing the imaginary movie studio who created this film that was more successful than they expected. So now they just put a bit more money into the sequel. Phantasm, if you will. Yeah. So the idea for the sequel, and you know, like Phantasm 2 has a little bit more of a budget, doesn't it? They put a little bit more. It's a bit glossier. You know, like there is a Murder Road 2, ideas for Murder Road 2. Which I'm hugely excited about, but I can't say too much because it involves some things from the first one. But I don't want to spoil too much. But yeah, it all fits together nicely.
I'm kind of doing mental gymnastics in my head about like what I can and can't talk about. I'm sure you're all doing the same.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they haven't got issue 2 yet, so it's kind of you got to be careful.
Yeah, I do.
And with the rest.
Yeah, I mean, my story definitely has its sort of. Jamie Lee Curtis or Ellen Ripley, you know, Sigourney Weaver style characters that are playing into a certain mould, which I hope people will latch onto and care about them. Even though, obviously, the driver and, like, the villains are, you know, where the fun is, I guess. I hope people stick around for, you know, the actual supporting characters. That would be nice.
Yeah.
I hope.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
But we shall see. You know, my story's a hard one to... It's a bit trickier. It's easy to do like the elevator pitch, but I can't really say too much about it because I kind of want people to see it for themselves. It's like I wanted to show some artwork from it. Oh, yeah, check this out. But how do I show a panel without spoiling something?
Yeah, I know what you mean. It's kind of hard when, I guess maybe for three of us, if you start showing off the artwork, you can kind of give away massive chunks of the story, and I don't want to take that away from people who might want to enjoy it.
Because all three of the stories are so visual, aren't they? They're so, you know,
yeah,
so much going on, which I love. I mean, we're two issues down and we're still going strong, and I'm still very, very proud.
Yeah,
I can't wait to.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, definitely.
I can't wait.
And we've got the cover sorted for 3 now, haven't we?
Yeah.
And the art's on its way. And, it's getting there. Yeah.
And Andy Bloor did an absolute knockout.
He did. He killed it on that.
Issue 2.
Really good.
He did the Murder Road cover. We have a Cockney Kung Fu cover for issue 3.
Yeah.
And issue 4 will have a Viper cover. So there you go. That's the plan. So, And it's wanting to show these covers but not show too much at the same, you know, there's nothing quite like actually releasing a cover. I can't wait to show people the Cockney Kung Fu one as well. That's gonna be good.
Yeah, it's great, isn't it? Yeah, it's good. And it's by a little bit of a celebrity as well, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's great. When he first, it's so different, and yeah, it's really good. Enjoyed it. Yeah, really good.
Yeah, cool. It works out perfectly with the style and layout. And issue two, obviously, of the comic as well as these stories, and we went for something a bit different. It had a fan art page in the background.
Yeah, like that. Yeah, it looks good as well.
We've
had some cracking fan art. And thank you to the people who sent it in. I think the people who sent it in, surely they must know that it was going to get printed. Surely. Because it's all so awesome. But looking at it, so far, there's only a little bit of Murder Road in it. I know something Dan and Tony said to me is like, there's not much Murder Road in the fan art. But then again, part one didn't have the main villain in it, so I was like, I can understand why no one's drawn anything, because I've given them absolutely nothing to draw.
Our two main characters look relatively similar when they first kind of popped out of the
that's true.
They kind of changed a fair bit. There's a big difference between the two.
And there's certainly a big difference in how they act.
Yes.
If you're going to Cardiff on June the 2nd, that is where we'll be launching issue 2. If you can't make it, you'll still be able to get hold of issue 2, because we're launching, we're updating the Big Cartel on exactly the same day, aren't we? June the 2nd.
Yeah.
You'll be able to get the digital copies. So from 10, is it 10 o'clock the doors open, I believe? Yeah.
I'm not sure actually, mate. Yeah
I think it's
sure.
10 o'clock. You'll be able to get Awesome Comics issue 2. One thing I didn't notice about our stories, they are fairly kind of ongoing. They don't have a previously on.
No.
So I think we'll be pushing all of the previous issues as hard as the latest issue. Won't we?
Yeah, we'll have a pile of both, won't we?
And get involved and find out more about the story.
Also some plans, obviously, for after we've finished, because they're single issue comics within themselves, aren't they?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. We're going to continue into a second volume for Connie Kung Fu. That's the plan.
Yeah.
You could essentially, like, all the material you've talked about, the extra material, they could go in with those comics.
Yeah.
Like the pros.
That's kind of the plan for us. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're going to, I can't really say, but I've told you what the plan is.
Yeah. Yeah. There's been discussions between us, and I talked to Dan about it. I think it was at Leamington. in a crazy kind of expanded universe kind of way. I don't want to say too much about that, but
is Dollman going to kill them?
Oh god, Dollman's awesome. Going to kill us all in the end.
That'd be great. Dollman kills the Awesome Comics universe.
I do want to work in a picture where Sloane's driving Viper with Red in the car, and they're being chased by the car out of Murder Road.
That'd be ace.
God, yeah. That'd
probably
be amazing.
Getting off with each other as well.
Oh dear, yes. But we won't say too much more about it now, because as we've got a letters page in the comic, we want you lovely people out there to ask us about it.
Yeah.
Yes.
So there you go. And like we say, we are going to be at SICE 2018, Cardiff Independent Expo, Saturday 2nd of June at the Mercure. I can't say it. You say it, Tony, because I can't say it.
Is it Mercure?
Yeah. Holland House Hotel, Newport Road, Cardiff. It's going to be a brilliant show. Just check out the guest list. I mean, there's loads of exhibitors as well, but right, I'm going to try and do this in one breath. This is the guests.
Good, do it.
John Davis Hunt, Chris Wildgoose, Laura Trinder, Rob Williams, Rachel Smith, Abby Bulmer, The Etherington Brothers, Mike Collins, God Machine, Cy Goyle, Patrick Goddard, David Roach, Martin Simmons, Dylan Teague, Simon Williams, David Leach and Connor Boyle.
Davey Leach isn't going now. I think he's cancelled.
Ah, well, never mind. So, yeah. But as well as that, I mean, I started to write the list of exhibitors, but it's so massive that I just gave up.
Yeah.
There's some
cool people, and there's us.
Some cool people. There's some even cooler people, and we'll be there with a table. And we'll be trying to get interviews on the day. Another thing of note during SICE, get your tickets now. I think the pre-order runs out On the 27th of May. I want not on the 27th of May. It can't be. Yes, it can be. Yeah, because I oh my God, time travel has totally messed my brain up. Yeah, 27th of May, I believe, is the last date for pre-ordered tickets. So go to siceevents.wordpress.com to find out more. Check out all the brilliant exhibitors and all the news and stuff. They're also going to have a retro gaming area. I know that's for Tony. You love it.
Me, I don't know what that means. I have to say, for about a few weeks, every day I would send Christian Wild Goose a picture of some bananas. And then we moved on from that to pictures of the band Bewitched. I would keep sending him every day when I got up a picture of Bewitched. And now I've started sending him a picture of a rather creepy woman staring at him. And he just messaged me with, well, it's better than bananas. I'm going to send that picture to you two now, right in a second. Just to cheer you up.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
And while Tony's doing that, there's also, during Cardiff, they're supporting the University of South Wales, the first ever comics symposium.
Oh, yes.
On June the 1st and 2nd. Now, the symposium, in association with Cardiff Expo, is hosting a practitioners panel on Saturday afternoon featuring John Davis Hunt, who's obviously from the Wildstorm Clean Room, and Rob Williams from Suicide Squad, Martian Manhunter, Unfollow, which is a series I still need to read, actually. I can tell Dan's just received that picture. Oh my life.
I saw that picture somewhere.
That and I thought, oh God. Yes, but please try to make it down. Like, if you're going to the expo, there's a panel with John Davis Hunt and Rob Williams. Entry to the panel is free to expo ticket holders. The panel time hasn't been announced yet, so stay tuned to the Cardiff Expo. Now, for the actual symposium itself, the tickets are £20. But like I say, if you've got a size ticket, you can chill out and go to the event for nothing. Well, the panel. And the panel is a 10-minute walk from the expo venue, so there you go. Yeah,
okay.
It's going to be brilliant.
Cool.
So we'd like to hear more about that, depending on what it is.
When this show airs, MCM would have been and gone.
Yeah.
So look forward to chatting on the Awesome Comics group on Facebook, see how people got on.
Let's see how
you got on. That'd be really interesting. Who else was there?
We've muttered, haven't we, about when we've got all four of this issues of this under our belt, we was going to do one.
Yeah.
We might brave it.
Yeah, yeah. People have said you're fucking mad.
Just to try and shift the stock.
Yeah. Well,
I've done a table in there for about three quarters of a day and I was like, I've fucking had enough of this.
Yeah.
I was just...
No, but we can do it though. There'll be three of us. Yeah. We'll be able to like massage each other's backs.
Might be in like an old school reference, but like if you go into like an arcade on a pier or something and all the fucking noises and lights are around you, it's like that dialed up to fucking 20. Just constantly. And I can remember going down for a piss and the fucking stairwell was stacked with cosplayers waiting to get in front of a sink and a mirror. And
Really?
Oh, yeah.
So we might do that next year.
Yeah,
really looking forward to that. Yeah.
Oh, so until then, do we have any shout outs this week, gents?
Yes, I've got a couple.
I got
messaged by Gareth Brooks and also spoke to Ricky from Avery Hill. I bumped into him at Orbital and had a good chat the other day. South London Comic and Zine Fair is the 14th of July. It's at Stanley Halls in South Norwood. If you go to... Yay!
I went to school.
Is it? Oh, nice.
You didn't go to school.
Yeah. He schooled hard people knocks. There. Yeah. If you go to @SLCZF or Instagram.com/SLCZF, then there you can find out all the details. And it's got a great poster by Tim Bird as well for it. So make sure you go to that. That's about it for me, actually. That's all the only ones I've got. Yeah.
If you like takeaway chicken shops, you're in luck.
Yeah. No, and trashy people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Throw your boots.
Other chicken shops are available.
Yeah.
Do we have any recommendations? I completely lost track of where we were then. Do we have any recommendations this week, chaps?
I did. I fucking read a book on Comic House and it's in the bloody Kindle downstairs, so I'm gonna have to leave that till next week. because
that's something to look forward to, isn't it?
Shall I do mine?
Yeah, go for it.
I did. I got sent through by RamV and Action Labs. This is the second week in a run that Action Labs have been mentioned.
Yeah.
Ruin of Thieves, a brigand story. $3.99, 36 pages, full colour, as I say, published by Action Labs. Warning, this book contains blood work, blade work, and sharp-tongued devils. That's the little byline for it. Written by RamV, art by Sumit Kumar, and colours by Roche. Interestingly, I'm not sure it's just the copy I got sent, but I couldn't find a credit page. I'm fairly sure. I'll be told I'm wrong and someone can point it out to me that it is in there, but I couldn't quite see where the credits were other than the single names on the front page, you know. Which is strange these days, isn't it? So it opens on a map that someone unseen is burning a line across, and he tells the sort of other unseen companion that this is the line that the comet will take. And the scene changes to a young shepherd guarding his herd during the night, and the comet sort of burns through the sky above this shepherd's head. He becomes like sort of scared, and he runs towards his village only to see it destroyed by the landing comet or the crashing comet. And as he turns around, he realizes he's surrounded by a shadowy army. The next scene's an officer in his army, and they've boarded a galleon with the intention of investigating it and searching it, and he's looking for some stowaways. They're not there, but then you find out that they've escaped by swimming to the beach and taking refuge in a tavern. And you realise that this is a land that's sort of in revolution and civil war, and different factions are fighting each other. And this, what you get is a group of thieves and murderers and assassins, and even a young sort of pyromaniac and a wizard, who are the sort of rebellious group, if that makes sense. It's a bit like Hawk the Slayer. I'm going to say it's a bit like a sophisticated version of Hawk the Slayer, if you've seen that, guys.
I have seen that. It's a great film.
Yeah. The high point of the book for me is the art. It's absolutely gorgeous. It's just really detailed. It's a long first issue. Great, absolutely great sort of classical figure work. Everything is perfectly sort of constructed and dramatic and heroic and perfect for a sort of fantasy comic, if that makes sense. It's a sequel to a book called Brigands, which I didn't in fact read, but I probably would go back and read it. It's mostly set up, this issue, which is something I suppose we could talk about a bit, for a fantasy story that's going to be sort of probably a large-scale thing. All fantasy books have got to be like these huge legendary stories, I think, these days, haven't they? And there is, for my money, a little bit too much talking and exposition. There's a couple of moments where I've had to go, I'll have to reread that panel. I think it's kind of... There's a line between writing people in character and in sort of the language of their sort of home countries and making it more readable. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
You can write someone who's got sort of a heavy accent or is using phraseology or stuff, but it also has to flow well. So there's that fine line of, and it took me out of the story a couple of times. I had to go back and read a couple of panels. But it's the beginning of a big epic story. It's a great setup. It looks amazing. You know, there's everything you could. There's galleons and villages and armies and taverns and, you know, all the classic scenarios or settings for an epic story. I'll probably get on it. It looks good. I want to pick a copy up. You can find Action Lab.
Tony?
Oh.
The Night Ram or ram-v.com. Graham's putting out a lot of comics actually at the moment. I know we spoke to him at London Super Comic Con, didn't we? And he's a possible future guest, but. Yeah, he's putting out a lot of good stuff. There you go. That's my one.
Listen, you dropped out for a second there, Tony.
Did I, mate? Sorry.
Just as you said, right. Action Lab. But you should check out Action Lab anyway, folks. Yeah.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, so it's my crappy hotel internet, I'm afraid, guys. There you go.
Right. Shouldn't be watching all that filth.
I know. I can't stop it.
My recommendation for this week came through the post this very day. And that is my printed copy of Horde, Volume 1. Now,
nice.
We had the Horde guys on episode 148, Andy Turner and Greg Mason, the sort of brain trust behind it, as well as a bunch of others. But seeing the final printed copy, it is well worth the wait. Lovely, lovely finish to it. But basically, it's a dark anthology sort of book, for those who don't know. I'm sure there's a lot of people out there who do know and saw the brilliant Kickstarter. But the book itself contains 5 stories, as well as some production notes, which is quite cool to have in the back, as well as a couple of pin-ups, of which myself and Mr. Butcher may have somehow got him in there. So you got, there's Berserk by Andy Conduit Turner, art by Beth Varney, letters by Rob Jones. Quiet, which is Andy Turner, Greg Mason, art by Greg Mason and letters by Rob Jones. Business, which Andy Turner again, and art and letters by Stelladia. Got Milk, which is that's a funny title, I think. Writers,
that's the line from Entourage, isn't it?
Well, it's also the line from the milk adverts in the TV.
Oh, is that where he is? Yeah, he shouts, "Got milk," and then he shouts at a woman running past, "Got milf," in which I thought was quite funny.
Well, this story is Got Milk, and it's the writers are Dave Killian and Andy Turner. Art and letters are from Joe Flood. And finally, you got Entombed, which is Andy Turner and Dave Killian. Art by Gav Mitchell and letters by Rob Jones. Yeah, lots of different dark little stories. You've got people trying to live in a silent world, in a post-apocalyptic silent world. You've got a young girl hiding from her enraged mother, who she's locked into a room. You've got a new business has come into town when it comes to like death gods. That's the best way to say it. I think they're like our stories as well. You kind of don't want to say too much about them because, you know, in 5 or 6 pages you'd spoil the surprise. But it's so professionally put together, so brilliantly done. Everyone obviously will have their personal favourites. I think it's hard to pick one, but I think if I had to, Entombed is one of my favourites, because it's always good to see Gav Mitchell's artwork out and about. And also that one has a real sort of like Egyptian mummy kind of vibe, which is always quite cool. I've always liked those sort of rollicking historical adventures with a bit of a supernatural twist. Yeah, and it's great stuff. They got some great production notes, sketches, as well as some lovely pictures of the creators in the back, giving everyone their proper due instead of like just one line saying who they are. They've got a proper sort of like little bio of each person, which is quite cool to see. And like I say, cut the pin up. So Horde are now going to be on the convention circuit. So, and if you do see this, it is a proper professional package that we've come to expect from indie creators. And for it to be their first book, I think it's very impressive. So yeah, check out Horde Comics on Twitter, which is it on the inside? Or go to hordecomics.com and find out more. It's brilliant stuff. I really enjoyed it. So that's going to go very proudly in my small press shelf, which is growing ever heavier every day.
Yeah, so, same.
I need to get another bookcase for it at some point. Or someone might burn them.
New house.
a new house. Yeah.
All those annuals Tony gave me.
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Are you still living on your throne of annuals, Tony?
Still working my way through them, yeah. There's a member of my household who isn't too pleased, and it's Dan, because they're in his way. Yeah.
Oh dear. Get them out of his way. He doesn't need that.
Can you build like a tunnel for him to go through?
Oh, he'd love that. Little steps or something to get in the car.
That'd be brilliant.
Yeah.
That'd be brilliant. If he does have a problem though, he can always get in touch with us. He can email us.
Oh god.
AwesomeComicsPod@gmail.com. Which is also where you lovely folks can get in touch with us as well and let us know what you think about what we spoke about on this episode. It's an earlier recording, so we've been a little bit feistier. I've got a blocked nose, which has just gotten worse as the night has gone on, and I'm totally aware of it. So apologies about that. We also have a competition which is running for another week where you can win a no-brow book.
We've had 3 successful answers to that so far.
What was the question, Tony? Can you remember?
Last week, Deadpool 2 came out, the successful sequel to the movie Deadpool. I went and saw it on Sunday morning, and afterwards, I went for lunch. What did I have for lunch? The choice you've got is, did I have a plain packet of crisps, veggie chilli, or cheese and pickle sandwiches? There you go.
There you go. If you could be in with a chance of winning a no-brow
Dead
book.
India. Yeah.
Dead India from No-Brow.
Why?
With No-Brow.
Oh, I'll get you paid for that one, mate. That'd be fine.
You can email your answer to tony.awesomecomicspod@gmail.com and we will announce the winner on the next show. So, if you do Twitter, follow us @theawesomepod where we will announce who's on the next show. Sometimes if we're at a convention, we'll post maybe a picture if we can remember, if there's a decent Wi-Fi. So, you know, stay tuned to it, because you never know what might crop up.
Oh, yeah. Shit, I was going to say the Kickstarter call out, but that's for us because we're doing it earlier.
Yeah.
So, yeah. That's a complete waste of time me saying that. Excellent.
Nothing you ever say is a complete waste of time, Dan.
No, don't do yourself, Dan.
Yeah. You're worth so much more. And if you do Facebook, like us on Facebook, facebook.com/awesomecomicspodcast, and join the group that is the best group anywhere.
Yeah.
And that's Awesome Comics Talk. That's so lively. Every day I'm seeing something new, brilliant going there, whether it's art, talk about events, and just anything in general. There's so much great stuff going on there, so we love that. And we love seeing all you people get involved, which is brilliant. So thank you for joining us this week. And if you listen to us on the website, awesomecomics.podbean.com, thank you very much. If you listen to us on iTunes, if you do that every week, subscribe. Go on.
Yeah.
And leave us a lovely review. I haven't checked the reviews recently, but I don't think we've had one for a while.
No, we haven't had any for ages.
We're just going to be really sad about it.
Yeah.
I'd have thought the winning the award, we would have got a few more kind of people saying, yeah, you know, it's all right. Yeah, but nothing.
Yeah.
Awards aren't everything, Dan.
The cupboard is bare.
Yeah. You glory monster. thank you for listening to us on the networks, wherever you heard us, the Stitcher network, Podnose, Podknife. What are the networks we on, Tony?
Pod Reasonably Priced Hotel.
Oh dear. That was quite a long-winded one.
Thank you.
And where can people find us online, etc., Tony?
You can find me at neverironanything.blogspot.co.uk or on Twitter, Ezohyes, E-Z-O-H-Y-E-Z. There you go.
Daniel?
You can find me on Twitter at Vanguard Comic, and you can read Vanguard at vanguardcomic.com. I've just posted up the cover to issue 15, so you can have a gulp of that before it starts next month.
Nice. And you can find out more about my comic at theredmousefrommars.com, and you can follow me on Twitter at JesterDiablo. Now I'm going to go off and just put my head in a bowl of Olbus, I think. And the other two are going to go off and enjoy the rest of their week, because we're not
recording. I'm going to have a bagel. That's what I want to do.
Oh, we'll get you.
Do you know what?
Continental of you.
He's the Keith Moon of this show, isn't he?
Yeah. Keith Lemon.
Is that only two famous Keiths? I think that's it.
Keith Chegwin?
Chegwin. Yeah, Chegwin.
Yeah, Chegwin.
Because he was an Alky, so that plays much more into me. And he appeared naked in public.
Yeah. Just like you, Dan.
Yeah.
Yes. We look forward to seeing you at Cardiff Independent Expo this coming Saturday, or, you know, just seeing you in general. We love you. So have a brilliant week, folks. Read loads of cool comics from Dan, Tony, and myself. Have a brilliant week. And as always,
stay awesome.
Thanks, Dan. I'll get you next time, Tony. I'll get
we
you next
work
time.
On that.
Yeah. See you, folks.
Bye. See ya.